listening to Beyond Migraine, a six-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland, brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The views, information or opinions expressed during the Beyond Migraine podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of the Migraine Association of Ireland or Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This podcast is supported by funding from Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Please note, any comments posted are not being monitored by Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Reporting of suspected adverse reactions is important. It allows continued monitoring of the benefit-risk balance of the medicinal product. To ensure correct adverse event reporting, healthcare professionals and patients are encouraged to use their National Competent Authority reporting scheme. Or you can also report via tevapharm.com/contact us. If you've been affected by any of the topics or themes discussed in this episode, please visit yourmentalhealth.ie. You can contact AWARE on free phone 1800 80 48 48 or the Samaritans on 116 123. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by three guests, all with very different experiences, to further understand the relationship between migraine and mental health. We have Aoife Gallagher, who lives with migraine following a viral infection a number of years ago. Aoife discusses her condition on her blog, My Headache Life. Aoife, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you, Debbie.
I'm also joined by Jane Whelan, who's a Migraine Association patient ambassador, and she herself has suffered from chronic migraine for more than 30 years. You're very welcome to the show, Jane.
Thank you, Debbie.
And Jane also teaches yoga and teaches yoga classes specifically tailored for people who are suffering from migraine and other chronic pain conditions. We're also joined by Dr. Sabina Brennan, who's an Irish neuroscientist. She's currently adjunct assistant professor at Trinity College Dublin. Sabina has her own podcast on brain health and how to transform your everyday brain. She's also an author of the best-selling books, 100 Days to a Better Brain, and her most recent book, Beating Brain Fog. And Sabina herself is a migraine sufferer, so she has a very unique perspective on the condition. You're very welcome, Sabina.
Thank you very much.
So Aoife, I just wanted to really to go to you first and to talk to you about your story. So throughout this podcast series, we're trying to talk to people to demonstrate the real impact that migraine can have on their personal lives. And your story particularly really shows the very real everyday impact that migraine has on your life. Tell us a little bit about when you started getting migraine.
My pain literally started overnight. I never would have had a history of migraine or, you know, anything like that. So I literally woke up one day with really severe headache that over the following few days got worse and worse and worse until eventually I went to the doctor and I was rushed into hospital because they weren't sure what was going on. Initially, it was thought it was meningitis or viral meningitis, but it turns out it was just a viral infection, a severe viral infection that we don't know the cause of. That was almost 6 years ago. It was the 1st of April, 2015, and I've had a headache since. It has never left. It has never gone. It's of varying degrees in severity on a day-to-day basis. Some days it's very manageable, and other days I am literally passing out with pain. So it's, and that's literally been the journey for the past 6 years.
So you're suffering from migraine and New Delhi persistent headache. You have two conditions, really, do you?
Yeah. So basically it's, I'm in the lucky position. I get to have a headache all the time.
Right. So you're waking up every day with a headache. And in terms of the mental health impact of that, like I just can't imagine waking up with a headache. How do you cope with that reality? Or
in the beginning, it was very difficult. I won't lie. It was an endless round of every day hoping that was the day the pain was going to be gone. And every day going to bed realizing, okay, that's another day gone and I'm still not any better. And then eventually over time, it's amazing your body actually gets used to having pain. So I can function, you know, pretty good on, you know, when the pain's not too bad. And then on the days when the pain's awful, I've learned to adapt to it. I've learned to get used to living with the pain. And there were some days over the past 6 years, there have been like days where it was really, really tough. It was a huge struggle. And my mental health definitely took a battering, to say the least. But I think over time, I had to adapt to living with the pain. And rather than having the pain control me all the time, by learning to live with it, I suppose I have better control on my own life, and I can live it better, and I can manage the pain better, and I can cope with it better.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important message there within that, because I think for some of us that have migraine, maybe even not as severe as yours, Aoife, is that we're always looking for a cure, and there's a grief in there about the life before migraine. And in some ways we have to just not to accept it, to look for better outcomes, but to accept that we have a condition that we're not trying to constantly cure it. Is that part of your kind of thought process as well?
Yeah, for a long time, I felt that if I accepted the pain, then I was giving into it and that I was giving up hope of anything. But then over time, I realized that if I accepted the pain, but didn't feel bound by it, that it gave me a freedom that I could say, okay, right, I'm going to have this pain. It's chronic. It's likely I'm going to have it, you know, off into the distance. But I can do more. There's more to me than just headaches. There's more to me than just this constant pain, that the person I was before is still there, but just slightly different. And that gave me the freedom to just not always be, you know, looking on the negative side. I started looking at, okay, I can't do this and I can't do that, but I can do these other things. And I started looking at, you know, the positives that are within it. And even if my pain was to disappear today, I couldn't go back to the life that I had before, because I'm a very different person now. And that's because of the pain that I've had over the last few years. I suppose what I'm trying to say is you learn to live with the pain.
Yeah.
But you start to see beyond it.
Yeah. And Jane, you've suffered from migraines since you were, I suppose, since you were young, even though you may not have realized it was migraine. So does what Aoife speaks about, that kind of impact and acceptance, does that speak to you in terms of your own experience migraine?
Yeah, it's a little different though, because I've never known life without migraine. Now, I didn't really have migraine as a child. I probably did. If I look back now, the signs were probably there, but it was in my teens, it really became a thing. And I'm the typical person who transformed from being the episodic, you know, having a migraine maybe once a month as a teenager. And then in my 20s, it growing. And by my late 20s, becoming chronic. But that acceptance, I know exactly what you're talking about. But for me, it's just been part and parcel of my life. I didn't have to change from not having it to changing to a life with it. It's just part and parcel of my life. But there's definitely the whole accepting and coping and living with it. That has been, it's taken a very long time, I think, because when I was younger, there was a little bit of denial because it was only episodic. So I didn't think about it in between attacks. I didn't want to think about it. And it was only when it became chronic and still was probably a bit of a denial of, you know, I'm going to do everything everybody else can. This is not going to stop me from doing things. And I paid the price for that in a lot of cases. And, you know, I persisted in a career that probably was a terrible career for somebody with bad migraine, because I was traveling constantly. And I think it's really only in my 40s that I've sort of got a handle of, you know what, this, I've given up on the, it's never going to go away, or unlikely to go away. It's probably just going to always be there. So it is just learning to adapt, as you say, and live with it, and doing what you can to manage it as best you can. So there's a certain acceptance there in just helping you cope.
And Jane, you adapted it to the extent you've mentioned it briefly there. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, you had a career organizing medical conferences, and it would have involved a lot of travel and high pressure. But you actually made the decision to change your careers, didn't you, because of the effect it was having on your health?
Yeah, I did that job for almost 12 years, and just wasn't a very healthy lifestyle for anyone really, but particularly for anybody who has any issue with the brain. And I was also living with endometriosis. So the two conditions, really living a life like that was just not good. So I was doing a lot of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, taking early morning flights, which meant by 3 o'clock that afternoon, I had a migraine, you know, time zones, erratic eating, and then obviously working in events, it's incredibly stressful. Just a lot of instability. So yeah, I reached a point where I went, what am I doing? This is not any way to be living. And this is not helping my migraine. And that that was a really big decision. And I think a lot of people thought I would still work in events, but maybe cut out the travel. But I just went, no, you know what? I actually don't think that there's a healthy lifestyle for me to be living just with the irregular hours and the instability. There's always change in events. So I needed something with a bit more routine. And I now work in a job where it's very much 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. There's no extra work. It's office based. And if you told me that 15 years ago, I would have gone, oh, that's very boring. I won't like that at all. I love the thrill of, you know, traveling and going different places and meeting different people. But I have to say the routine has been really good for me and good for my brain.
Yeah. And that's very hard when you're younger as well, because it's that thing you don't want to be missing out, you know, and you shouldn't miss out to a certain extent.
No. And I think I was very much in denial about how stressful it was and how I was quite anxious about things. And I just didn't even recognize it in myself. And I look back now and go, what was I doing? You know, like I always thought flying triggered migraines, or it was the, you know, the stress of meetings and stuff. And it was only when I started getting migraines on the way to the airport, I went, oh, it's not the airplane and the flying that's giving me the migraine. It's the whole buildup and the anxiety. Have I got everything ready for this meeting that I'm going to? I haven't slept properly. I've, you know, just that was a real wake up call to me to go, yeah, anxiety is a big part of this and I've got to get a handle on that.
Yeah. Now, Teva conducted a survey in 2020, the Beyond Migraine Survey. And in that survey, 51% of people with migraine are frustrated, 53% are exhausted, and 30% feel depressed and sad. And Sabina, I just really wanted to go to you to talk about those comorbidities of anxiety and depression that are occurring with people with migraine. You know, what is that impact? You know, why are so many people suffering from anxiety and depression and migraine?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting question. And I don't think science has the full answer yet. There are a number of possibilities. Two of the key possibilities are, as you mentioned there when you were talking to Aoife, was, you know, it's the burden of the constant pain that you know, geez, who wouldn't feel depressed? And then Jane also mentioned, you know, the anxiety linked in with her migraine. And so possibly maybe are people with migraine more pro, you know, is it sort of chicken and egg, you know, in that regard. The other possibility is that migraine and depression and anxiety share a common pathophysiology, so that there's something in the way the brain operates that is shared between anxiety, migraine, and or depression. So that's a possibility, but I don't think that there's full answers. But I think what is important is that we can learn from those things, that there are, they can point us towards solutions. And, you know, Jane found her own solutions. And I mean, for anybody, even for people who don't have migraine, regularity is critical to the functioning of your brain. You know, your brain literally looks after absolutely everything that you do. It manages your emotions, it controls and regulates your hormones, and then your hormones in turn, you know, regulate your behavior. It keeps you alive. And, you know, I mean, as Aoife said there, you know, she got a very severe viral infection. And we're seeing now with long COVID that a lot of people who have had COVID, sometimes milder COVID, are now developing migraine. You know, and that's kind of not surprising in some regard, in that there's been some sort of assault on the brain through the infection. So the pointing towards the, you know, how we can do, you know, deal with it, stress is classified as a common trigger of migraine, and stress itself can gradually develop into actual, you know, a medical diagnosis of anxiety or a generalized anxiety disorder. And then if you're constantly stressed and in pain, you know, you can understand where the depression might come in. So I think it's absolutely critical for people, for anyone, but particularly for those of us who live with migraine, to manage our stress. And that's very, very possible to do. And one of the ways, you know, that you've both spoken about managing stress is acceptance. You know, sometimes our stress comes from constantly trying to change things. You know, why can't I have it this way? Why can't it be that way? What can I do? You know, and I mean, I used to, you know, if a door closed on me, you know, metaphorically speaking, I would bang and bang and bang on that bloody door. And as a result, it's with wisdom and with age that I've realized, actually, if I just turned around, the draft from that door banging has opened two other brilliant doors and opportunities, you know. So I have chronic daily migraine. So, and I've had it since I was a child. I haven't got my diagnosis since I was a child, but I do very much recall my mother bringing me to the doctor when I was 9 to find out why I had headaches every day. And interestingly, he said, oh, she's trying too hard, Mum, to please. But I suspect that probably there's some truth in that, because I think a lot of migraineurs tend towards perfectionism. We're very hardworking. I think it sort of speaks to the fact that a lot of people with migraine don't talk about their migraine. I actually never told anyone I had migraine. And it was when I was actually working on a global committee about brain, migraine and brain health. And I was brought on it as an expert in brain health. And they were discussing how we could improve migraine in the workplace or whatever. And they, some suggestion, and I said, well, I know that bloody wouldn't work for me. And that, you know, and someone says, you have migraine. And I kind of went, and I actually realized in that moment that that was the first time that I said it sort of publicly. And I really don't think I'm alone in that. And I think that's another way that you could actually manage and control your migraine, and why it's critical for us to make people realize that migraine is not just a headache. You know, it is a neurological condition.
And Jane, for someone like yourself, who's always lived with migraine, and you've spoken before about your family and how they just accepted that you would miss things because you'd be lying down after getting a migraine, that must have affected you as an adult.
Yeah, well, I think there's a few family members who have migraines. So it was just part and parcel of life. It was nothing out of the ordinary. But yeah, it just, and I have to say, my family are amazing. Like, they're so supportive and so good. I don't want to make it sound like they're not. And likewise, I have friends who are fantastic as well. But yeah, there is always that little sense of, they go, oh, where is she? Oh, she's gone for a lie down. She has a migraine. And it's, they're not making a fuss of you, which is, you don't want a fuss, that's fine, you know, but you do feel like you're always the person who's not around or letting down or, you know. And I realized I'm very bad at committing to doing things and saying, volunteering and saying, oh, I'll do that. I'll cook the dinner. I'll do, you know, everyone come to me this weekend for dinner, because I'm always afraid, well, what if I can't do it and I have a migraine and I have to let everyone down?
Yeah. Yeah. That is a real impact, definitely. There's another aspect of migraine. So if you have chronic migraine, and you know, you have a migraine every day, or you're going through a particularly chronic period, we're told constantly, and it is right, that lifestyle changes, dietary changes, mild exercise, they can help you. But it's also, it's hard when you're in that kind of vicious circle, isn't it, that you feel so bad every day. How do you get the wherewithal to go out? Aoife, I know that you yourself have started walking during lockdown, and you've seen some benefit from that. Do you have any advice to people that are maybe in that situation that you're in? Is it little bit by every day, just a little bit every day of exercise?
Yeah, I would find, because I would also, from the viral infection, I would have developed chronic fatigue syndrome. So not alone is it the fatigue with dealing with the pain all the time, but there's also, if I push my body too far, I pay the price. And it's literally, I have a flare up and that's it. There's absolutely nothing I can do. You know, I'm too tired to do anything. I'm fatigued. I suppose maybe the background to it was that for a spell, I was using a wheelchair and a walking frame because I just was too weak to do anything else. And then with a lot of hard work with my local physio, I gradually built up the strength back into my legs and into my arms. And then to keep that up, I had to start walking. Just something to do every day. Plus, it was also getting me out of the house, because I don't leave the house if I don't have to. So getting out for a walk every day was like that headspace for a while. My walking comes and starts and fits sometimes. I can walk for kilometres. Like last year, I did the Virtual Women's Mini Marathon. I did the 10K. But then roll on a couple of months later and I wouldn't have been able to walk, you know, 10 metres, never mind 10 kilometres. So it's like I have to listen to my body when it's tired. So I will walk, and I'll try to walk every day or most days. Say like yesterday morning, I went out for a walk with the wind and things like that. I noticed that my head was starting to get very sore. So I just said, right, that's okay. After 2 kilometres, I said, I have to go home. And I did that, and I had a full-blown headache for a while. Other days I can go out and I can do the 5K and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take a flinch out of me. But it's about listening to your body and paying attention, because I find if I push through that barrier, I will pay the price, and then I will be down in a heap for days after it. So if I listen to the body when it's telling me to stop, then I'm better able to, you know, to go out again the next day. So it's like bit by bit, and then I can add a kilometre on every, you know, if I start at 2 kilometres this week, in 2 weeks' time, I'll do 3 kilometres. And in 2 weeks after that, I'll do 4 kilometres. And, you know, and if I have to knock it back to 2 kilometres for a week, that's okay. I don't put any pressure on myself anymore.
And there's an acceptance within that again, isn't there? There's just accepting that one week might be worse, one week might be better, but that just to do a little bit every day.
I think you're right. People think I spend my time doing all these crazy things, and actually I don't. There, you know, are people think I do yoga. They said, you do yoga every day. And I said, not physical yoga every day, because there are days where like that fatigue is just too much. Or if I have a lot of pain, I could have the pain right down one side of the body and I just cannot do things. But I came to yoga maybe about kind of 15 years ago. I started doing a bit more yoga practice, and it was actually at the time I thought I had that, you know, how a lot of people with migraine get a lot of neck stiffness, and I had it all backwards, thinking if I could just stretch out my neck and shoulders, I would not get these headaches anymore. And I thought if I just did more yoga, surely this will all go away and I'll feel so much better. And that's kind of what got me doing yoga. And of course, now I know the migraine starts in the brain. The neck stiffness is a symptom. It's not the cause. But through the yoga, I have learned so much. And actually what I find now, yes, the stretching and all that gentle kind of movement is great, particularly actually after a bad attack when you have all the tightness and tension. I find that's quite nice to undo everything.
So Sabina, just to go to you, just about that whole issue of, you know, stress reduction, exercise and brain health. I mean, what's the evidence out there in terms of what can people do to improve their brain health?
Yeah, there's very strong, you know, evidence there in terms of, you know, generally improving your brain health. And I think like when you have any sort of disease or disorder, if your general health is good, you can see how that will, you know, benefit you. And I think the same really applies with the brain, and particularly as migraine is a neurological condition. You know, I'm just listening there for years, Jane. I thought the same, you know, about my neck and shoulders. And it was only very recently that my migraine, I never even said it, you know, to my neurologist. And it was only he said to me, but that's all that all actually comes from your head rather than the other way around. And I had it the other way around. I have it at the moment. I have actually quite a bad headache at the moment as we speak. And my neck is like I've iron bars down it and across the shoulders. I also have fibromyalgia, which I think is probably really just, you know, I think that's a name that's put on it. I think it's probably related to the migraine. You know, I mean, you know, you can touch, barely put a finger there and it would feel like it's burning at times if I'm bad. So, and I do think migraine can be related to other issues as well. I have an autoimmune condition too. But I think the key is, you know, physical exercise is actually really very good for your brain. And listening to Aoife self-manage there, I have some days where I'm really, really bad. But I think it's really important because I think there's a real danger line. There's a fine balance there when you have migraine or any other chronic condition to rest up all the time. You know, and actually, you know, if you just take the analogy with a broken ankle or a twisted ankle, there is a period in which you have to rest up to allow the inflammation to go down, to allow the acute phase to, you know, go through and run its course. However, there comes a point where you have to use that ankle again or you will lose function. And it is painful. You know, even with a twisted ankle, to start using it again, and you actually start maybe not to use it properly, and you actually have to go, no, I actually have to put my foot fully down. It is going to hurt, but I have to go through it. And the same applies, you know, when it comes to exercise. You know, it's good for us for so many reasons. We're talking here about mental health. You know, physical exercise is really good for your mental health. You know, getting outside, particularly if you go walking and doing that. But it's also really good for your brain. And this is important too, because migraine, you know, can be related to, you know, vascular, you know, issues. And the thing is that your brain depends on your cardiovascular system for the oxygen and nutrients that it needs to function. It's a really, really high energy organ. It only weighs 2% of your body, but it consumes 25% of the nutrients circulating at any point in time. Now, if you don't have a healthy cardiovascular system, if that's compromised in any way through diet, lack of exercise, being, you know, overweight or obese, your brain is not going to get the oxygen and nutrients that it needs. Yeah. In a regular way. So anything you can do to look after your cardiovascular health and your heart health will benefit your brain. And I mean, anybody, I think most people with migraine will know that if you're in a stuffy room, you'll get a migraine. You know, you're really just not getting the oxygen that your brain needs. And most people actually will begin to feel headachy in that context. So physical exercise is critical.
And what about parenting? Because I think that's one of the things I know, and you say take a nap and, you know, get some sleep. And I think in the Teva survey, 57% of people, which is a huge amount of people, felt that their children's life was really impacted by migraine. And in terms of mental health, that's a huge worry and stress. And it's something you can, to a certain extent, manage your own life, but trying to manage your children's life and toddlers who don't sleep and you know, babies you're up at night, that's a tough one. And I know you yourself had that experience.
Yeah, I did. And it's a tough one. And I mean, on top of that, so when I would have those headaches, I would, you know, I'd be pretty damn irritable and wouldn't be the nicest mom in the world, you know, and on many, many occasions had to apologize to my kids and sort of say to them, when mummy's like this, you know, it's really important that you just stay and play quietly, you know, because I would, the slightest noise, you see, is just so irritating, you know, if you're in that kind of context, and kids don't understand that. I would say, it really is important that if you have young kids and kids like that, you know, you've got to look after yourself. It's not being selfish. It's being sensible, and perhaps consider factoring that into a routine, you know, that actually if you really do need a nap, to sort of actually train your kids to have a nap at the same time as you, or else you sleep when your kids sleep, and, you know, damn the housework. Or actually, you know what, you know, if you have like this kind of would have been what I did at one point, you know, rather than spend money on a night out, I actually got someone in to help clean the house. And then I could focus when I was good on being with my children rather than going around cleaning the house. And for me, I wasn't loaded. I didn't have a lot of money. But, you know, most people have enough money sort of to go out at night or whatever and probably drink alcohol and, you know, eat food to excess. Yeah. So that wasn't it for me. That made much more sense. The whole quality of my life could improve by using the money for that instead of that.
Yeah, it's a matter of coping and getting through it. And Aoife, just to go back to you a little bit there. So this has had a huge impact on your own life in terms of your housebound for many parts of the year, the last year. So what kind of impact has it had on your own like family relationships? And
my kids, when I got sick, my youngest was 5. And now because I am 6 years into this, he actually only knows me as having headaches. He doesn't remember the time before that. And that's tough because, you know, he sees his other friends out and about, well, pre-COVID probably, but, you know, out and about with their mums, you know, at the local football games or whatever. And I was usually missing. I wasn't the mum that was there. I wasn't the mum that was able to help out at, you know, over at the school or anything like that. I was the missing mum. My older kids, while they had a greater understanding of what was going on, they had to grow up a little bit faster than other kids the same age. They had to take up more slack with chores around the house. They became really good at doing the shopping. They're much better doing the grocery shopping now than I am. And my husband, he was working every day. And because when I was, especially in the beginning when I was so bad, he had to be mum and dad. He had to try and keep the house going. He was out working all day, every day. He had to try and do all the things with the kids that I would have been doing before that. So it was like a major shift. And part of that for me was I struggled with that shift in that I went from being the mum that cared for everybody. I knew where everything was. I looked after everything. I did everything to suddenly I was the one that had to be cared for. And it was like a major shift in mindset. The whole family dynamic changed and I started to feel very helpless. And that whole feeling of being a burden and, you know, all those different things, the guilt, everything that comes with that. And it's still, like, I know it wasn't my fault. It wasn't, like, I wasn't to blame for what happened, but neither was it my children's.
And would you say communication is key there? Because sometimes parents can be afraid to talk to kids about conditions, but to explain to them what's happening. Is that an important point in the relationship?
Yeah, especially because mine came so suddenly, like on like Sabina and Jane, like mine came so suddenly, we all had this hope that it's going to go away. And the day that I went, that I was kind of freshly diagnosed with the neurologist, and he said, like, it's, you know, new daily persistent headache and it's chronic daily migraine. And my husband's first words were, well, what do we do to get rid of it? And the neurologist said, there is no cure. You know, that's the bottom line. There is no cure. It's about finding a treatment that's going to help you manage. So to come home and have that conversation, to try and get a grasp on it myself first, and then to explain to the kids that, yeah, this is something mommy's going to have. But I tried to keep, I always try to turn it around that, yeah, okay, this is a headache that mommy's going to have, but we need to find a way to deal with it. So on the days when I'm good, I try to do more with the kids. On the days that I'm bad, they all have their jobs. You know, on the days that I'm really bad, where I actually pass out with the pain, they're like a wee army and they all just slot in. They all have their wee jobs that they do. They know exactly what happened. They know to get out the ice packs, and they are. They're like a finely tuned army.
And how have you been coping in the pandemic, like in lockdown? Has it been better or worse for you?
A bit of both. I was so used to having the peace and quiet every day, because for me, noise is one of my biggest triggers, especially the hum of people talking. So having everybody at home in the house at the one time was, I would often disappear out of the kitchen away down to a quiet room just to, you know, or there's times I just have to say, can you all just be quiet for 5 minutes? Just give me 5 minutes, let this head settle. And they're so used to me now. It's like, they actually know to look at me, what level my pain is at. So everybody just, I suppose it's just from living with it, and they're looking at me all the time. They know exactly what's happening.
Yeah. And Jane, what about you? Has the pandemic been good or bad for you? You're working from home, obviously. So we think of migraine in the workplace being a triggering environment often for people. So is it better that you're at home working?
It's been a complete mix. And actually I've been able to go, my office is very close to where I live, and I have had to go in a few times. It's something I can't do at home, but I've been on my own in there, and I've gotten very used to being in the office on my own and being quiet. I've gotten much better at saying no, and I've got to really maintain that now, because I've realized doing less is better for me in managing my migraine. Now, on the other side, to flip that around completely, what I have found just in recent months, my migraine has gotten so bad, and it's a combination of, I think the weather was so terrible in February. I wasn't out doing my walking, and we're talking about exercise, wasn't getting as much fresh air. That windy, turbulent weather is really bad for my head as well. I was doing a lot less, and I think not having the usual distractions in my life has made me have to face up to some other kind of, I suppose, life events. I've had various things happen over the last 7 years, and this has been a little bit confronting. Of there's things there that I thought I was okay with that I've now gone, you know what, now I've had a little bit of headspace to think about these things. That's brought up some other stuff and some anxieties there that I'm going, yeah, I need to look at that. So it's, the pandemic has been really interesting. I've learned a lot from it. So pluses and minuses.
Yeah. And one of the things that struck me when you're talking about, we talk about people that are kind of locked in this circle where they have a condition and it's hard to get out and it's hard to manage it. So it occurs to me that people who have loved ones or people that they know might be listening to this podcast, because they want to help somebody. So Sabina, what advice would you give to people listening and how to best to support and to help people?
That's a very good question. I think it is funny. I mean, this really fine line between self-awareness to benefit you and blame. I think really, if you know your loved one's triggers, a little bit of sacrifice in that regard can make a huge difference. I mean, I'm like Aoife, noise. And I also always feel there's just so much noise going on in my head anyway. And it's me self-talking, what I mean. I don't have tinnitus. But I cannot bear extraneous noise. And I will notice noises that none of my other family members would notice. I'd say, oh, what's that? And I really can't listen to other people eating. It sounds awful, but it really just, it sets my brain off, you know? And my husband is quite the reverse. He loves constant noise. He loves, and I have one son who, you know, he has dyslexia, but sort of linked with that is a door banging and not, you know, banging things down, not realize, you know, he can't quite judge the distances. And so you're on edge with this pain. But, you know, my husband very kindly, he would constantly, you know, when we were married first, he'd always have a radio on, he'd be singing music around the house. And he'd have TV on nearly in every room. And I, you know, we just had a conversation and I just said, look, this drives me insane. It really makes sort of life unbearable. And so we don't have a radio in the house anymore. And he doesn't. And he will go to another room and he will sort of say, do you mind if I watch this in here? Which room do you want? Because I might be reading. And we manage it that way. So I think that would be, you know, helpful. I mean, it does mean that the other person is compromising, but the person with migraine, it can really make a huge difference. And I say that as well about the brain fog. You know, with brain fog, you can be an awful lot slower processing information and you get frustrated with yourself and other people get frustrated with you, perhaps. But the thing is, if you have an injury to your hip or you're on a stick or you're recovering from an operation, people will just wait up for you. And they'll adjust their pace to walk with you because they can see it. And we just need to raise that awareness that, you know, if I'm struggling to find a word or it's taking me a bit longer, don't make fun of me. It's fine if I make fun of myself because that's a way to cope. But give me the time.
And brain fog is such a big one for migraine sufferers. How do you cope with that, Jane?
You know, I'm not getting it as badly as I was, but I think I had it for years and I didn't even know that that's what it was. I just thought everyone was a bit like that and that it took everybody 2 hours in the morning to kick into action. And, I also thought, like, you know, I grew up in a household where like getting up early was a good thing, you know, whereas it took me forever to get out of bed and get going. And I had the sense then that there was laziness and there was something wrong with me and I was a bad person. And it's taken me years to kind of shift that to go, no, it's just the way my brain is. Whereas 11 o'clock at night, I'm sharp and I'm awake. You know, my best hours for work are actually around 5 p.m., which is the opposite to most people, you know. So there's no use asking me to do something at 8 o'clock in the morning, but ask me to do it at 5 o'clock. I'll happily stay working for a couple of hours, no problem. And definitely, yeah, I would have had a lot of brain fog in between attacks. It's lessened a little bit, probably just because I'm doing some things to help. When I'm going through a good phase of migraine, where I'm only getting a couple attacks a month, in between the attacks, it is all that extra stuff of the brain fog, or I might have these random pains that are not quite migraine, but I know it's all related to my migraine. And sometimes that is actually more debilitating than the attacks. At least when you have an attack, you kind of go, right, I have my medication, I'll do X, Y, and Z. I have my ice packs, I can go lie down, I can do all the things I can do. But it's the in-between when you're kind of half functioning or you're functioning at 75%. And like that, you're trying to say to somebody, I need to dim the lights a little bit. I would be very photosensitive even in between attacks. So, you know, I'm constantly going around, you know, dimming lights in the house, you know, turning down radios a little bit, or I could be in a restaurant or a cafe and I'll say to a friend, do you mind if we swap places where we're sitting, because maybe there's a reflection of light in a mirror, or I'm very sensitive to movement. So somebody, even a busy cafe where a lot of people are walking and moving around, can really upset my brain and make me feel quite unwell or a little bit dizzy. So, you know, you're always having to ask for these little accommodations and stuff. And you're right, people don't, you don't want to sound like you're being fussy and a bit of a pain in the neck, but you're trying to get people to understand. And you're absolutely right that there are people who have maybe never had a headache in their life, who just have no clue, or some people who have had a few and they are quite empathetic about it. But sometimes there is a bit of like, oh, here we go again.
Brain fog for me actually really affects my work. That's where I find it most impactful, is that it's, you don't have, so you have to stay in work because you don't have a migraine. So you can say to people, you know, I have a migraine and I have to go home. But if you're in work or you're giving a presentation or you're trying, and like you're looking for a word, and no matter how many times you think of that word is not going to, like, I've looked at a kettle and said to my husband, I know what that is. I know it's called a kettle, but I can't think of the word kettle. And then about an hour later, I might have a migraine attack. And Aoife, you must be dealing with this. If you, is this an everyday occurrence for you, that kind of brain fog? Or?
Yeah. And like as Jane said, sometimes I find it's worse than other times. Like that, I can be in the middle of a conversation with someone and it's just like my mind just totally blanks. And it's like, I have no idea what I'm saying. And it, people try to help you out. And I have to say to them, it doesn't matter how many reminders you give me. It's gone. It's I have no clue what I was even speaking about. And they say, oh, we were saying. I was like, yeah, but no, it's totally gone. Or as you say, you know, get me that thing over there, or, you know, pointing at stuff. And the kids are like, what do you want? And I was like, that thing, you know. Or, you know, there was an example when they were away in the car with the kids and I was trying to ask them, did they want to go for McDonald's? And all I kept doing was the M sign because I couldn't think of the word. And I kept saying, you know, the thing. And I was doing the M sign all the time. And you know, eventually one of them copped on. It was like a game of charades. But, you know, it's different things like that. That, yeah, you know, sometimes if I'm in the middle of, you know, we're saying something, a word goes and I just be like, yeah, tune in next week. Because, yeah. You know, I just, like as you say, soon, it's just you make a joke of it yourself. Some days it's good, you know, it's not too bad. And then other days, yeah, I'm doing right off.
Do you mind if I just kind of pop in on that? So what you described there, you know, in terms of not being able to find the words, that's a language issue. It's not a memory issue. Do you know what I mean? And similarly, like decision making, a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, if I have bad brain fog, I can't even decide what to wear. You know, and that would hit me. I used to travel a lot pre-pandemic as well. And sometimes it would take me hours to pack. Because I could not figure out what I should put in my case. What's the and I would be looking, what's the temperature like over there? But what the temperature is here, do I need to pack this? And I mean, that's the level. I've spoken to people with brain fog who can't even prepare a dinner that they've been preparing for years because they can't get it together to figure out what order things go in or what ingredients they need. So I think it's on us at the moment to actually empower ourselves. You know, here's what's wrong. This is what's wrong. This is what it's doing to my life. Can you help me?
You've been listening to Beyond Migraine, a 6-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland and brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland.